Thank you for joining us for Life and Taxes with tax attorney Andrew Foster of Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law. Call in now with your tax questions at 800-818-2255 or locally at 247-7282 or 353-4674.
And Andrew Foster in the studio. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning, Ben.
What are we talking about today?
Well, Ben, today I need you to wheel that gavel of justice.
good. Put on the judge's robe.
Yep. We've got it's actually a U.S. District Court case. It's not a tax court case. But we do have a case today this morning. It's very simple facts. And I'll get to see your opinion on this one, because this is one, again, the raise of the eyebrow. It kind of surprised me a little bit.
Okay.
The outcome on this one. And just the premise of it is basically, I'll just say, to e-file or not to e-file.
Mm-hmm.
That may be the question for our listeners in the future. And this case, Ben, deals with late filing penalty. So, you know, we mentioned here in the last couple of weeks, get those extensions in.
Right.
And the critical reason you need to get those extensions in is because, you know, if you don't file your return, you're subject to the late filing penalty. And just bear in mind that late filing penalty is a percentage of the tax that's actually owed on your return.
Mm-hmm.
So the more tax that you owe when you file your return, the higher the penalty will be.
Right.
Because it's based on the percentage. Therefore, if you don't owe any money and you file late, then we always say no harm, no foul, because, you know, percent of nothing is nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
So therefore you don't have a penalty. But our individual in this case did not owe nothing. He owed a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get into the facts here, and we'll get to see what Judge Ben has to say.
Okay, all right.
About Mr. John Spotswood.
Mm-hmm.
This case is Spotswood versus United States. And pretty simple facts, as I said. So John used TurboTax to prepare his return. And he hit his submit button when he got everything ready to go. He had double and triple checked everything and felt good about his numbers. He hits a submit button for the program to submit the return to the IRS for e-filing. Problem is, John entered one of his children's social security numbers incorrectly, and it didn't match the IRS's database for the child's social security number that he had used in the past.
Okay. It must have been the first time he'd used that TurboTax.
Exactly.
Yeah,
okay. That's exactly what I'm thinking too.
Yeah.
Because normally it would have picked it up, but it didn't. So therefore, the IRS rejected the return, and TurboTax sends an email to John and says, "Hey, John, you know, your return has not been accepted by the IRS. There's a problem that needs to be, addressed." Well, guess what? He didn't get the email. And so he thought when he hit the submit button on the
all was done
on the on the TurboTax program that his return had been accepted and had been filed. And so therefore, flash forward 18 months later.
Right.
And he notices there's a problem with his return, and he goes, "Oh gosh, my return didn't get accepted. It's been rejected by the IRS." So immediately when he discovers the mistake, he then...
This is more than a year later, so he's already filed another return.
Yeah, he's already filed another return. He files the return that's missing and is hit with an $89,000...
Whoa!
...failure to file penalty.
Mm-hmm.
So $89,000. And he goes, "Oh, gosh, this is crazy." He said, I literally thought my return was filed. I had no clue. And then when I discovered it, I file it. And now here I am staring at an $89,000 penalty in the face. So he pays the interest on the penalty and then asked for the penalty to be abated.
Right.
To go away. And ultimately the IRS says, "No dice. We're going to stay with the penalty. The failure to file penalty that we asserted."
Okay. So he takes it to court, but it's not tax court.
So he takes it to court. It's the U.S. District Court. And he has two arguments. Okay. And I'll give you the arguments, and then I'll let you decide whether or not you think he's going to be successful.
I already have one question to ask.
All right.
Go ahead.
So number one is that he says that his rejected return should be considered a return. You know, he hit the submit button. He thought it was he had tried to file it, and therefore his rejected return should be considered a return for purposes of the failure to file penalty. That's his first argument. His second argument is, in the alternative, he has reasonable cause
abate
the penalty. Yeah. Because, you know, he discovered his error. Upon discovering his error, he immediately corrected the error. He acted reasonably.
Okay.
Do you believe that John will be successful in getting his penalties overturned at the U.S. District Court?
One other point of fact I need to know.
Okay.
Did he owe taxes on his first, on his return?
He owed $395,000.
Did he pay it?
Oh, good question. Now you're getting into the facts, Ben. Mm-hmm. So the short answer is that no, he did not pay it. He had it set up to be a direct debit from his account to pay the IRS. But when his return was not accepted, the IRS didn't debit the account. And during the trial, it came out that the, and again, this is one of the most wild arguments I've heard. He has so much money in his bank account
that
he didn't even notice the $395,000 wasn't taken out.
Well, he may have people for that.
Yeah. So I was like, man, that'd be nice, wouldn't it, Ben, to have a bank account where, you know, you don't even notice $395,000 is gone.
Well, a couple of interesting things of points of law, I would think, here. One is if you're paying by check, for example, and you wrote that check and put it in the mail, it's considered paid, whether they cash it or not. Mm-hmm. Isn't that right? Am I correct on that?
Yeah, I mean, you could make that argument.
Yeah,
because
I think, you know, it's a postmark thing. Yeah. Now it's when it hasn't been paid.
Yeah.
You know, he made, to me, he answers those questions right. And I'm going to guess that because you said it was a raised eyebrow, they're not going to agree with that. But, but I see all those arguments. I think he made the effort to pay it and an error on a typo, seems like a very egregious wrong that would be against.
So your instinct would be that you think the taxpayer should probably win this one, but just because I said the raised eyebrow, you think that he doesn't.
Yeah, and the interest that he paid also should abrogate that some, because he recognized that they had a right to do the penalty, but they should be abrogated. So
you're right. So the decision ultimately comes down that John is still responsible for the $89,000 penalty that's associated with the return. You know, and I mentioned he made two arguments. So the first one is that his rejected return should be considered to be a return. And here's his argument. His argument is, had I mailed my return in, had I actually just signed it, popped it in the mail, and there was a problem with my child social security number, you would have accepted the return, and then we would have worked out the social security issue. Social security number issue later. You know, during the course of the, you know, you'd got a letter saying, telling him there was a problem.
Yeah, it didn't affect the tax.
But it still would be, the return would have been quote unquote accepted.
Because there was a check in there.
So, you know,
because the check is cash. Doesn't matter if they, you know, they say they accepted a return, but in reality is they cash the check and then they look at the return.
So that was his argument. And I felt like that was a pretty good argument. Yeah. The problem he had there, Ben, was he couldn't point, he was trying to point to the Internal Revenue Manual, which is basically the IRS's guidelines on how they deal with filed returns versus e-filed returns. And he was trying to point to that, and he couldn't quite put his finger on, yes, that's exactly what would have happened. The return would have been accepted, and then we would have worked out the social security number issue later. It didn't really come out and specifically state that. So the judge kind of danced around it and just said, no. Well, that's not, since you can't point to that would have been what would have happened, we're not going to allow you that argument to succeed.
Yeah, see, on appeal, I would draw up any number of people who have said they've had their check cleared and then they've had their return sent back because of a problem.
And then his reasonable cause argument that we mentioned, it literally hinged a lot on exactly what you said, which the judge made a big deal about the fact that he owed $395,000 and it never cleared.
Yeah.
You know, the money never got debit out of his account. So therefore he should have known there was a problem with his return. And you know, there was so much money in my bank account I didn't notice $395,000 wasn't missing.
Well, he's not gonna notice the 89 either.
Didn't fly. Yeah. And I guess that's the key. But I mean, you know, this is an interesting case, and we started with the premise at the very beginning is to e-file or not to e-file. Mm-hmm. You know, and we mentioned that the service really likes e-filing because, again, they can identify errors just as this, you know, a transposed social security number.
But it also talks about how law is not caught up with technology, because if the law is going to recognize a postmark and it's going to recognize a written check as a payment, whether or not, you know, the filing is correct or not. And we've all been there on that one.
Yep.
I mean, everyone is sending a check, but maybe there's been a mistake in the filing and they come back on you on that. Yep. But the law hasn't caught up to whether or not the e-file, it counts as mail.
You got it. And that's, I think, is a very critical component to this whole situation, mm-hmm. which is, you know, a lot of CPAs, have written briefs. They call them amicus briefs when these types of issues make it to the Supreme Court, or even to, circuit court cases where they say, look, there needs to be consistency.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to say that a mailed return is a filed return, then we need to say an e-filed return that you submit is a filed return. And has there been a problem or mm-hmm. an issue that will get addressed later on in the process? But we're not ultimately going to hold you responsible for a failure to file penalty when you did everything you could do as mm-hmm. a taxpayer to try to get your return filed.
Go ahead.
And my thing is when you e-file, you trust, okay, well, it hasn't come out yet, but when they need it, or when it's supposed to come out, they'll just take it.
Yeah.
So you don't assume, like, there's going to be, like, the
day. There's not a day.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's not a guaranteed day for that. Well, in fact, until I probably have e-filed for at least a decade, and then for the last 2 years, including this year and last year, it was the first time I actually had it automatically debited, because I have 1099 income, always mm-hmm. have paying some taxes. So it's, this will make me rethink that, because in the past I've e-filed, but I mailed the check.
Exactly.
So if that's different, well, then I'll probably go back to that.
I know. And again, keep in mind, it holds on there. And I remember with my wife this past year, you saying, hey, our return got accepted by the IRS. Well, that has a new meaning.
Yes.
Where you need to make sure that you get that nice acceptance, because otherwise you may be subject to failure to file penalties.
That's right. I did get the acceptance, both the state and the feds this time. So. All right. That's Life and Taxes with Andrew Foster. Go to HartvalleyCollins.com. You want to find out more? A Foster at HartvalleyCollins.com.